Yeah, I like to just sneak up on them when they're sleeping and shave them.
This is Up, Up, Down, Down, the show about the art and craft of video games. I'm Alan Pike. Joining us today is Nigel Brook, 15-year veteran in the games industry, having worked for Radical Entertainment. Later, Activision is now co-founder of Steam Clock Software. Hi, Nigel.
Hello.
Also joining us today is Tiff Arment. Tiff has been a panelist on The Incomparable and Isometric, is now co-host of the new podcast, Top 4. Hi, Tiff.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing very well, or at least I am. Are you doing well? Oh, I think Nigel's sick.
Aw.
Yeah, I got a bit of a cold, so I've got my gravelly, sexy radio voice on today.
Excellent. We'll get a lot of 5-star reviews. So our topic today grew out of a conversation that Tiff and I were having at the XOXO conference a couple weeks ago about survival games, and kind of discovered our shared interest in the genre, which is more and more becoming a thing. You know, 5 or 10 years ago, we didn't really think of it as an independent genre, and now it's like completely taken over Steam and a lot of the games that we're playing. So I wanted to do an episode on that and talk about kind of what makes that tick. I figured a good place to start would be to ask Tiff, how did you get interested in this sort of genre of game?
I guess it kind of satisfies my natural hoarding tendencies without filling up my house with things. Mm-hmm. So I get to spend some time playing games where I get to gather and create virtually instead of filling, you know, your house with balls of yarn that you never knit with.
Yeah.
It saves us all, really, in real life.
You say it casually, but it seems to me that like gather, create, and explore seem to be like the kind of main verbs in these kind of games, even though, you know, we discuss it as like Don't Starve is the title of one of the games, or survival sort of implies, you know, kind of what you shouldn't do, which is die, which is true in any game. But I guess it's that sort of loop of exploring, gathering, and creating that allows you to do that. And that's kind of like what the games are all about.
Definitely that resource gathering is kind of like the central mechanic. You know, all of these survival games, what the sort of fundamental risk is that you've got some resources available to you and they're all burning down at some rates, and you know, you need to sort of balance off using some of the resources to get a hold of the other resources that you're lower on, so you can keep all of your, you know, all of your stuff kind of in check. And I mean, something like Long Dark is very explicit about the way they do that, but I think all survival games have a certain aspect of that, right? That it's always a resource management game fundamentally.
Yeah. And did you get a chance to, I know Tiff and I were talking about Long Dark. Did you get a chance to check it out, Nigel?
Yeah, I've been playing it a little bit over the last few days.
Okay. Well, definitely want to talk about that and kind of some of the interesting experiences that can happen in that game. But the sort of origin of, I think, the modern survival genre has got to be Minecraft. This game that kind of comes out of nowhere, and I don't know if it was originally like theorized as a survival game, but that's kind of the core mechanic is like, okay, you're in this weird world and you kind of have nothing, and then you have to kind of evolve over time by exploring and creating and collecting to be able to defend yourself, and you can't starve in that game, right? It's just that you starve really slowly.
Yeah, you can, like, you've got both health and food as your two kind of resources, and if your food gets too low, then you won't auto heal anymore. Like, as long as you're at full food, you're always auto healing. And then I think if you run out of food, you start taking damage as well and eventually will die. But I'm not 100% sure about that. It could just be that if you get low enough on food, like, you won't heal anymore, and so kind of any damage you take will kill you,
right? And so that, you know, definitely is part of the game, although it doesn't end up being the main thing you're spending your time thinking about. You're like, every once in a while, you're like, oh, yeah, maybe I should eat, and then you eat. But that mechanic you describe is this sort of interesting decision that I think is a super interesting decision in all of these games, which is I can make this trade-off in between, like, taking some risks and then being able to kind of set myself up better. So you've built up your base, or you've built up this, you know, whatever equipment you've made or whatever, and then you can sort of take some risk. You're like, oh, maybe I should attack this little, you know, this creature, or maybe I should try to mine this precarious thing beside some lava. And if I pull it off, then suddenly I'm doing better off. But if I don't, then I can kind of like permanently lose all of my progress, which is a very different flow even from like other roguelike type games that you might play. That, yeah, there's definitely this chance of losing, but it's not from you. Oh, normally it's not from you deciding, well, I'm going to try and do this completely freeform, you know, thing to advantage myself or collect more stuff. It's normally just because you're moving forward and eventually you can't move forward anymore. So you get killed by a dragon or something.
Seems like all three games that we're going to be talking about today have very similar playing elements, but I think that each of them has a little different, I don't know, nuance to it that makes each one interesting in its own right. So you could play them all and not feel like you're playing redundant games, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, they all, so the three games I think that in this genre that are we've played most recently and we are kind of discussing, talking about are Minecraft, The Long Dark, and Don't Starve. Well, there's lots of other sort of, you know, adjacent ones and stuff that are also kind of interesting to talk about. But The Long Dark is one that is very different. I mean, all three of them are very different stylistically. Minecraft, obviously, this like 3D cube world. But The Long Dark is interesting. And I had sort of heard about it, but it was actually Tiff at XOXO that kind of convinced me to jump into it and start playing it. Do you want to describe a little bit of what that experience is like?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I started playing it a couple months after they released the beta. I think they're calling it the beta, not the alpha. Not sure. Anyway, but a couple months after they released it on Steam, so it was pretty rough. Let me tell you, when I started playing, there were no menus. There was no graphical menu. It was all just text and words, and they were still figuring things out. I mean, animals kind of like hovered in the air as they walked, you know, but it was still so playable. And it was just, what's great about The Long Dark and what really captured me about it is it's a story about a pilot who crashes and gets dropped in the Canadian wilderness in the middle of winter. And you only have on you what you were wearing, pretty much. And you have to survive as long as you can. And that's it. And there was some sort of apocalyptic something that happened that has wiped out everyone else. So a big theme in this game is isolation and loneliness. But at the same time, you are walking around enjoying this beautiful landscape as you see the weather changing and the sun changing. It is very dynamically plays off the hills and the mountains. And again, the graphics are not amazing, but they are, there are certain parts of it that you could see where they put in a lot of time, but for the most part, it's, it looks a little bit Half-Life 1-ish, I guess. Would you say that, you know, especially the corpses?
I would say it's a little nicer than that. I think you remember Half-Life 1 looking
better
than
that. Yeah, it's a little better than that. I think the thing that they've got going for them is they've got a really clear art direction. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's always the thing with any 3D indie game is if you've got a clear art direction, then you can make up for a lot of not having the volume of artists to build out a whole bunch of content. And Long Dark definitely has that of every scene looks really interesting, even when you can see the edges of the polygons.
Yeah, I agree. But if you think about looking at the corpses that are like lying in the snow, like, you know, they're a little rough.
And they're probably just thumbing off the Unity asset store. They're like, buy one corpse.
Yeah, exactly. But everything spawns totally mostly randomly whenever you play. And it's a permadeath game. So you die and lose everything that you have gotten as you progress, and it's one of those games where as you play and you learn, you die a lot to learn how to play. There's no map. You have to figure it out on your own. I've been playing for probably over 100 hours, probably more than that, but so I drew my own maps based off of memory and exploring the terrain a lot. So a lot of people have done that online, but I try not to spoil myself to look that kind of stuff up. So I like to play pretty, let's see, what's that word? Undisturbed, I guess.
I know exactly what you mean, but I'm not sure if there's like a term of art for it. But like, it's not about spoilers as much as, but like trying to play fairly.
Unassisted, maybe?
Unassisted, yeah. I want like the virgin experience, I guess, of playing the game. And I don't want it to be adulterated in any kind of way that I feel like I'm cheating. And Alan, you asked if I play The Long Dark on hard. I absolutely do not. It is impossible. I have tried multiple times and I get attacked by wolves within probably a couple hours and cannot survive because the animals get very aggressive.
It's really hard even on... So I'll admit... So Tiff, I'm actually interested in the general topic of you playing games on hard. Maybe that's another episode. I don't know. Because it's fascinating to me, people who like really just go for that challenge and have like... It fortifies them rather than discourages them. But I tend to play games on like what kind of halfway in between medium and easy. If it's a hard game, I'll play it on easy. If it's a normal game, I'll play it medium. If it's really easy, I'll maybe sometimes play on hard. But this game, I'm like, I can't put it on easy because like it's supposed to be about dying. It's supposed to be about the difficulty of surviving. Mm-hmm. But I definitely finding it pretty challenging. Especially particular elements like you burn so many calories, it seems to me. Like that seems to be the outlier. I guess we should explain the mechanics of the different things you need to do in the game.
Yeah. You definitely burn a lot of calories, but I think that's kind of because it's mimicking how you would be freezing, you know? So if you're freezing and you're burning a lot of calories trying to stay warm, I mean, you only have the clothes on your back in this game. And I guess something about if we want to talk about the dynamics of how this game actually functions, I want to really point out the beauty of a minimal screen with very few indicators on it. And I think that that's really pretty great. Like as you're playing the game, it's kind of in a first person perspective and you get to play as a man or a woman, which I love. So that's pretty great. And that was from right off the bat. They had a man or a woman you could pick to play. And again, this is just the sandbox that we're talking about because the actual gameplay, the storyline has not been released yet. So we're just playing open sandbox kind of game.
Yeah, the mechanics of the game are interesting and like it feels totally logical, but you pick up quite quickly that there's kind of four main things that contribute you to not dying. You have to eat, you have to sleep, you need water, and you need, what's the fourth one?
Warmth,
yeah. the one that's actually the immediate obvious one. You land in the winter and you start checking out the menus. Meanwhile, the game doesn't pause and you notice that your character starts saying like, I'm so cold. And then you realize by the time you finish checking out the menus, you've almost frozen to death.
Yeah, you gotta be checking menus inside or in some sort of wind shelter. Yeah, you can pause, but you can't check menus while you're pausing. So.
Which is really mean.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. That's what's so great about this game. It's so brutal. You know what I mean? The endurance of it. That's what I find really fantastic and fascinating.
I've played like 4 or 5 games of it so far, and I don't think I've made it past day 3 yet.
that's a huge testament to exactly how brutal it is. You have to die a lot to continue on.
You know, every game you learn something new about like, okay, well, here's kind of like the next hurdle I need to get over. But you have to play for at least like 2 hours and die to kind of work out what that next hurdle is. And like, okay, I've been being too cautious in this area and, you know, not aggressive enough in this other area.
Or wasted too many resources doing something you didn't need to do.
So also, sometimes in this game, this is one of the few things I find like genuinely frustrating about it, is the randomization. Sometimes you can just get so screwed by your initial start position. The game that I just finished playing like half an hour ago, like sort of getting ready for this, which I think I'm done for. Like, I haven't actually died yet, but I think I'm done for. Was going as well as possible, except that I can't find the hatchet.
Oh,
I'm on like middle of day 2 and I still haven't got the hatchet.
That's pretty typical though. Not being able to find a major weapon or tool is pretty typical. They've improved it since the beginning. It's definitely much more improved, and what you start with is also improved. You used to kind of be dropped in jeans and a t-shirt pretty much, and so you were pretty done for pretty fast. But yeah, you could go, you know, 10, 20 days without finding a rifle. So it happens if you don't know where to look or you don't know where to go. So
it's, yeah. I mean, that's something that comes up in all these games, that it happens in Minecraft. You're like, oh, I just can't find this one resource. What's the thing you need, gold or whatever it is to start?
Diamonds is the diamonds. Big one. Yeah, Minecraft, yeah. That's hard to find.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I can't find diamonds. And sometimes you find it quickly, and sometimes you just going and going, you can't find it. And don't starve. A couple times I couldn't find the beefalo.
Yeah, if you can't find the beefalo and don't starve the winter, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You can't make it through the winter.
Yeah. So in like bouncing around between these games that folks may or may not have played, and Don't Starve, it has a similar thing to Minecraft and to these other games where you're kind of start with nothing and you're slowly building up the ability to survive. And in Don't Starve, there's these little, and it's like a cartoony, Tim Burton-y kind of feel of a game. But one of the key ways of surviving is this mechanic where you can start like kind of growing your own food, and you can use, there's these cow, bison, yak things that they call beefalo.
Beefalo are a real thing. They're for real in our earth.
Beefalo are a real thing? As in, like, yes. There's an actual animal called beefalo?
There's actual animals in our world called beefalo.
Okay, I'm looking.
It's amazing. Beefalo. They don't look like that, but
it just looks like a cow.
Yeah, but they're actually beefaloes.
Also referred to as cattalo. Cattalo. is a cattle and a buffalo. Huh.
Yeah, and they've been around for a pretty long time. It's not like they just made it last year or something.
Oh, wow. I'm not entirely sure. I'm still skeptical whether or not they named beefalo in this after that, or if they're just being funny. And then
I don't know. Yeah, sorry for the digression.
No, that's good.
Actual beefalo learning.
anyway, so you can collect you can try to kill the beefalo and you can eat them, which has some pros and cons if you do that, but the more sustainable thing is to collect their manure and then use that to like farm.
And you also need to shave them for
yes,
to construct warm clothing.
Yes. So if you just kill them all, then it doesn't eventually ends up being bad.
Oh, but you know what? But it's bad mojo to kill them. They're so innocent.
I've heard that there's like consequences if you kill them too much.
Yeah, I like to just sneak up on them when they're sleeping and shave them. Then they wake up all sad
and naked,
patchy.
That's definitely something that's like a common theme in the games where you have, you know, like resources that are sustainable to some degree. Like Long Dark doesn't really have this, as far as I can tell. None of its resources are super sustainable. I mean, I guess I haven't gotten far enough in the hunting game. Like I've only taken down like one deer in all the games I've played so far.
Well, you can definitely deplete an animal population, and you have to wait for it to kind of regenerate slowly if you're surviving that long, I guess. But pro tip for anyone who's out there playing Long Dark, wait for the wolf to take down the deer, kill the wolf, then you get both of them at the same time. That's how you do it.
Certainly in Minecraft and Don't Starve, though, you do have that trade-off to some degree of like there's resources that can be depleted or can be farmed, and you got to make a choice. Like usually by the time you get to the mid game, even it's not really much of a choice, but definitely if you start out in Minecraft and you're like right next to a whole bunch of pigs, like you can set yourself up pretty good for several days if you just kill all those pigs and live off that pork for a while. But then you have to go much farther afield to find some animals that you can bring back and start breeding, you know? So that's why I say these games are always like resource management that's another element of that resource management is some resources are sustainable and some resources aren't. And you've got to pick whether you want the boost of harvesting those resources quickly or whether you're willing to be a bit more patient, but take a risk that, that you're not going to be able to put together a farm in time off the sustainable resources.
That happens to me in Don't Starve often when I encounter a new type of thing. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, beehives. Yeah, I want the honey out of the beehives. I'm going to just, like, burn the beehive. And then you get, like, a little bit of honey. And so you do that for the beehives. And then eventually you can't get any more honey. And you're like, no, I need more honey. Which is accidentally meaningful, I guess.
That's what I think I really like about Don't Starve, even though when you first look at it, it kind of looks like a animated, fun, little, quirky game that you're running around, you know, making some fire, staying away from the monsters and the little boogie shadows that are dancing around. But really, when you look at it and you play it for a while, you find that a lot of the resources, a lot of the ecosystems that they have in that game, the animal herds, they all act independently, and they're all programmed to kind of have a regular ecosystem mentality. So the beefalo will have a mating season where they get particularly irritable and you can't go near them, or they'll attack you, or then they'll have baby beefalo and then they protect them. And so like the herd goes through the yearly cycle, as well as when the weather changes, different animals appear, then different resources become more scarce and other ones are more flourished in the summer and spring, which I think that is really very dynamic for a game that appears to be very simple. So, and the other games, I don't play much Minecraft. I don't think it has those little nuances like that built into the game, but Long Dark definitely doesn't. It's a very static landscape. Besides the sun and the weather changing, you're always in winter, and if you harvest everything, it doesn't come back. But the Don't Starve, all of it comes back, as long as you don't burn it to the ground. But as long as you don't burn everything, it'll come back. So I think that's really what is keeping Don't Starve being the more dynamic game, whereas I find that Long Dark is kind of the more brutal survival game.
Long Dark, I definitely feel like, you know, as you start to know your way around and know where things are and know where the hurdles are, like you get to the point where you can knock some stuff off pretty easily, right? Like my first game, I didn't survive the first night, but then I've never not made it through the first night in any game since that, because like I understand, okay, yeah, it's not hard to collect enough stuff, and you know, there's always going to be somewhere close enough that you can, you know, even if you can't start a fire there, you can at least sleep there, and you're not going to be low enough on health. Like, all you have to do to not die the first night is not get stuck outside the first night, basically. But, you know, like I said, you have to learn each of those things kind of as they come. But I think they lock in a lot better in a game like Long Dark that is more static. Like if you know, oh, you know, there's this, like the trapper's cabin on the first area in Long Dark is like a really nice area, right? It's got like good hunting around there, as far as I can tell.
Often has the rifle.
Yeah, it's usually got a hunting rifle. It's usually got an axe. Like there's lots of, you know, even if you can't go out when you first arrive there, there's lots of furniture that you can break down. Like, you know, once you know that that place is there and have any chance of locating it from where you start, like you can just go there and be good for like at least a day without doing anything the least bit risky, right? Whereas something like Don't Starve doesn't really have those same kinds of lock-in elements, right? Every game is totally different in the structure of the world around you. And so, I mean, it's not as dangerous. Like, you know, you don't have the same kind of extreme existential risks as Long Dark does, but you don't have those things like, oh, once I know that I can do this thing easily, I'll just go and do it, because you can't depend on any of that for those first couple of days.
I haven't played The Long Dark long enough to get a good sense of... I haven't played enough different... The first game, I died almost instantly. And then the second game, I survived for 4 days, maybe. And then the third game, I'm like still in the beginning of it. I haven't got a sense of like what is random and what is always the same.
Well, pretty much for Long Dark, random is the food supply, where the resources are. Those are all random. What's the same is generally where the corpses are from the people that you find around, the same spawn places for larger weapons like the rifle are pretty much the same. There's like maybe 10 or 12 different spots that it could be in. So finding that sometimes can be tricky. You have to walk pretty far for it, but you know, the weather's random. I mean, I survived for 51 days, possibly 50 days. That was my longest. And I only play in the winter because I feel weird when I'm playing when it's summertime outside. I don't know. It just makes me feel awkward. So I didn't play all summer, but I haven't gotten anywhere close to that since I've been playing. So the 50 days, and then I thought I'd take a risk of trying to sleep outside and getting that kind of like achievement badge, and I just died.
Duh. So
I was like, that was a stupid way to go. Bad decisions. Because, you know, once you play for a long time, it's just like, you know, you can stay in a cabin and not have any kind of risk happening. And then you're like, you know what? I've been here long enough. Let's see what I could do. And that's when you get yourself in trouble. And I think that that's kind of neat, that that's very lifelike and it's very realistic. You know, like it's when you start pushing yourself, that's when things go horribly wrong.
But no, that's perfect. I'm so glad to hear that's why you died after that many days, as opposed to just, oh, you just eventually couldn't find enough food and then just slowly wasted away. Like, if it's like, oh, yeah, I felt like I was set up, so I decided to take this interesting risk, and then that was a bad idea.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens. I mean, one game I couldn't find a sewing kit anywhere, so all my clothes just gradually deteriorated, and I was naked and I froze.
Oh, no.
So that kind of really sucked, but
That's really bad.
It was really frustrating, like just searching every map for a stupid sewing kit, and I was just so mad I couldn't find it. But again, they've keep improving the game, so I don't know now how regular that is, but the sewing kits depreciate, what's the word, disintegrate, no, that's not it, deplete. That's it. Yeah, just like a real sewing kit would, you know, once you use it too much, it's gone. But what were we talking about?
Survival games.
right.
One thing I think we should definitely talk about in regards to survival games is the permadeath aspect of it, because I think that's the other, or maybe that's even the most unique thing that these games have going on compared to other games out there, is that virtually all of them are permadeath to some degree or another, or at least have like permadeath modes. Like Minecraft, the default survival mode isn't permadeath, but it has a permadeath survival mode, and Long Dark, as far as I can tell, Don't Starve are just only permadeath. Like, you know, you never sort of get a second chance at it, which I think that's a really important part of the mechanic of the game, that, you know, most of these games would probably be almost too easy if you could save, because they're so dependent on these like risk reward kind of stuff, and you know, deciding when to take your chances and there being some risk that you're going to die. If you could always just jump back to the, you know, to the previous save point, then there's never any real risk, because you can just keep trying until you do it.
Yeah, it keeps the stakes nice and high with the permadeath. You know, you really have to judge your risk and reward. And I think that that's what makes these, like, especially a game like Long Dark, where there isn't much happening in general when you really think about the gameplay. It's kind of repetitive what you're doing, but it's the idea of the risk and reward. Like, do I want to go out in the snowstorm because I'm almost going to starve to death? Or do I stay here and hope I can make it and hope the weather dies down? And, you know, you make those decisions and they feel like actual decisions as opposed to strategy. And where, like, oh, if I save here and then I wait and then if I try it and I die, I could just go back and try a different way. So it makes it much more real and visceral, I think, of an experience while you're playing.
It's definitely an interesting, like, choice. And this kind of happens in stuff like Minecraft and Don't Starve, but definitely in the Long Dark, because it's much more realistic and it's much more gritty, it felt way more real when I was, like, in a cabin and it was nighttime and I was cold and all these other things, but I had one of my things, I think it was that I was about to starve. I was like, I'm pretty rough shape, but most of my other things are good, but I'm about to starve and it's nighttime and I know there's wolves out there and I know that it's freezing and that I shouldn't go outside at night, but I think I need to, and I'm just going to do it, and I have to. And then actually I ended up finding food like at dawn basically and surviving. But that was like a really, because like I could have tried not to and then just like slowly starved and waited till later in the day. But like it forced an interesting decision. And then I'm wandering around in the dark, and like if it had that save checkpoint thing, then it would be like, well, I would just save. Like I wouldn't have felt that like intensity of making that decision. You know, has anybody tried Rust? This is, have you heard about this?
No, I haven't tried.
Yeah, I looked it up. It looked pretty brutal, actually. Like, it looked a little aggressive, and I got a little afraid.
It's definitely brutal and aggressive. So if you take, like, sort of the things we're talking about, Long Dark, where, like, oh, it's interesting how brutal and real and, like, kind of raw it is. Like, this is, like, even more so that way. It's in the survival genre, except that you play on servers with other people, and you... basically, everyone is going around looking for other people to beat up and kill and steal the stuff from. And it's so kind of raw that you start naked and then you like hope that one day you'll find pants. Like, that's how. So I played this for like 20 minutes, maybe not 20, maybe more like 10 or 15 minutes. And then I had yet to figure out how to pick up items. I saw items and I was pretty sure I could pick them up, but these games, none of them have any instructions or tell you how to do anything. And so I couldn't figure out how to pick up this thing on the ground, and then a naked guy came along and killed me. Like,
and that was it. It was over.
Maybe this game is not for me yet.
So that would probably be more of a typical like horror survival game, would you say, because of the frightening element of other people getting involved. Yeah,
being killed by a naked guy without even knowing how to pick up items is horrific. So
yeah, I don't want to think about that one.
In that way, it is a horror game, but it's not sort of horror themed in the way, like, there's also these zombie survival ones which I haven't played, which is like H1Z1, and there's another zombie, DayZ, I think the name of it is. But there's these sort of like really horror survival ones, and that makes sense. Whereas this is kind of in between. I think it's just like, you know, the standard post-apocalyptic. Okay, now we're suddenly all naked cavemen again. What are you going to do about that? And I think a bunch of the gameplay is about building defenses against other people. But it went, at least in its current early access, obviously. Or a lot of these games are in early access, but its current state of early access, it was still a little too rough for me. Whereas The Long Dark definitely felt like, even though sometimes I was struggling with the controls or whatever, it felt like when I was dying, it was my fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also like that. And it felt like that from the very beginning. Like, you felt in control of it. I mean, do you think that that Don't Starve has that horror element to it? Because there are kind of like these monsters that come up, and there's this great psychological element to playing Don't Starve that I think is really another little twist in it that makes it a delightful, fascinating game to play, that it's just not a little cartoon that you're running around gathering sticks and making fire, because you have to keep your mental wits about you. Otherwise, you get too freaked out and something grabs you in the middle of the night. So I think that that's pretty neat. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
I love the sanity meter. I mean, there's some controversy about using the term like sanity meter, and it should be like called something else. But the gameplay effect of it definitely is interesting, because it allows you to have that kind of that sort of slowly turning into a nightmare thing, but it being under your control. So if you really get freaked out by that and you're like, this stuff is driving me crazy, you can just, you know, really prioritize keeping your sanity meter up. And if you're just like, oh, this is kind of like neat, and then you're like, oh, whatever, the game gives you all these choices, like, oh, you can jump through these portals, and you get minus 10 sanity every time you do that, and so things start getting weird and kind of wacky, and dark beings start appearing. But you know,
lose
there's
sanity
benefits
when you go through the wormholes.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I've been playing this game for hours like, oh, it's so many hours, and I never noticed that.
I think you lose like five. I mean, now I kind of want to look it up, but I think you lose a little bit of sanity. There's lots of things that you lose a little bit of sanity for, like if you're playing Don't Starve Together, which is their new like multiplayer version, and your friend dies and they're a ghost, and you're like working on trying to how to like resurrect them back from ghosthood, then their presence as a ghost makes you slowly lose your sanity, which makes
which
it harder.
Is awesome.
At first I didn't think that it was a good mechanic, but then I realized, well, otherwise, like, it kind of is driving you to either fix the situation or die and then start a new game, because they're just ghosts. They can't really do anything. So it kind of forces your hand, you know?
The thing I like about the sanity stuff in Don't Starve is that it gives you, it fits really well with the aesthetic, right? Like, it's got that sort of like Tim Burton, Edward Gorey kind of look to it. And, you know, Edward Gorey in particular, which I'd say is like the closest match in terms of like an aesthetic of it, you know, is very much about that like subtle creepiness. And the sanity really does that, you know, that like when you start noticing that things are going on, like you start to doubt your own sanity a little bit. Like, did I actually, like, did that shadow just move? Like, wait a second, why are all those rabbits like black now? Like, you know,
the little demon jackalopes, right?
Yeah. Like you, it really gives a sense of like menace, which I think is something that it's hard to do well in one of these games. Like, you know, you're talking about something like Rust where you have this sort of, yeah, these other people are very threatening to you, but they're also very, you know, very random, like how you're going to encounter them and how skilled they are. Something like Minecraft where, you know, once you've put together some reasonable weapons and armor and built yourself a base, you don't really have to get into any dangerous situations unless you want to, like you choose to go out and fight monsters. Like, one of the things I quite like about Don't Starve is that it really nicely walks the line between, like, it's got that same kind of like, oh, you're just wandering around picking up stuff and like there's not much going on, but then when bad things happen, they really kind of intrude into the game, which is something that, you know, doesn't happen in Minecraft. Like, I don't find playing Minecraft survival mode interesting in the same way as Don't Starve, because it's more about, oh, build a cool base and set up farming systems and stuff like that, rather than something weird could attack me at any moment and I need to be on the ready for that at all times.
Yeah, I just wanted to, little funny anecdote is when I first started playing Don't Starve and I noticed the little shadow monsters popping out, I was sitting next to my son who was watching me play. My son is 3 years old and loves playing iPad games. And he always wants to play whatever I'm playing. So, but I wouldn't put this on his. Anyway, Ed, cut that part out. Anyway, so he was watching me play and I see this little shadow creature and I go, what the heck? And he says, what the heck? And we laugh and it was funny that he was saying that. And then a couple minutes later, we see another one. He's like, look, mommy, there's a what the heck. So he thinks that the little shadow monsters are called what the heck. So now he asked me to play. He's like, mommy, can we go play what the heck? So that's, he thinks that Don't Starve is called what the heck. And which I think is kind of adorable.
Which is pretty perfect, because that's a pretty common reaction that I have when I'm playing the game, even having played it quite a bit. I was playing with my brothers Don't Starve together, which is what you'd expect if you played it. It's like just Don't Starve, except there's another person there and they're helping you, or maybe not helping you, depending on what they're doing. But he chose one of these various weird characters that you can choose that is really good at cutting down trees, I guess. And so he's just going around cutting down less and less of trees.
I know who you're talking about.
And then suddenly one of the trees turns into a giant tree destroyer guy who's running around, not running, he walks pretty slowly, but he's going around trying to kill us, and he's way bigger than us. And we're pretty early in the game and we can't do anything to, like, we're like unsuccessfully trying to fight him, and we, like, he hits us really hard, and then we end up, I have this bright idea to light him on fire, which kind of worked, except then he starts lighting, because this was near our base, and then he lights our base on fire, and it's like, yeah, definitely what the heck is that?
Do you want to know how to get rid of those guys?
I did end up looking it up, because I was like, okay, well, that was stupid. But apparently there's these useless pine cones that I had been collecting. Joel was like, oh, well, I don't know, these pine cones, like, I guess you could plant a tree, but why would you want to do that? But it turns out they like it if you plant trees, so you can placate them.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, go back to sleep, ent. It's kind of like a huge ent, an aggressive ent. Yeah.
Tree guards. And then apparently there's like these various things you can do, but to like kill them or detect them and things like that. I try not to like research too much before I'm not quite as extreme as you, as like not wanting any outside information about it. But if I die from something, I'm like, that seemed really dumb. And then I will try and like understand, like, okay, how can I not die from that next time? That's my kind
of, I just,
like,
try not to engage anything.
Don't Starve combat is actually almost, in my experience, a bad idea. You normally want to avoid finding things, so far, at least what I found.
The little bit of Don't Starve that I played, I never starved. I always got killed by things. Like, not starving doesn't seem super complicated. Like, it's, you know, it's not that challenging to collect enough food resources to be okay. But definitely, if you are just sort of casually running around in the forest, you know, collecting berries and eating them and stuff like that, you are not going to be prepared when the monsters descend. Like, you need a little more.
I think that that's what's so fun about calling it Don't Starve, right? It totally thinks like, oh, this, so food's going to be super scarce and that's what I'm going to be working on. And then you play and you're like, I'm eating just fine. I'm eating like a king. Look at me. And then all of a sudden you get attacked in the middle of the night and you're like, what the heck? Right? That's just, I think that that's what makes this game so just delightful and creepy at the same time.
I think you're also both a little more conscientious than I am, because I definitely starved. Like, I'm normally, not because I have to, because I'm like, oh, okay, food's easy to get. All right, now I'm going to go and find stone. I'm going to find gold. I'm going to make a whatever. I'm going to farm these guys or whatever. And I'm trying to do all these various things. And then I realize that I'm like, oh, I'm running low on food, but there's this tree guy trying to kill me. Okay, well, I'll kind of fight him a little bit, and I'll keep an eye out for food. And I'm like, oh, I'm not finding any food. Okay, I actually need to find food. Joel, help me find food. Oh, Joel's on fire. He's not going to be able to help me. Like, and then I starve. And I'm like, the name of the game is Don't Starve.
Do you forget to eat in your real life?
Yeah, well, that also happens too.
See, I think it's the personality type. I'd usually never forget to eat.
Yeah, I need the little hunger meter.
Yeah, maybe it's like, remember to eat, you know, like, it's not don't starve because you don't have enough food. It's just like, you got to remember to eat instead of fighting the on fire tree monsters.
I've only gotten to the winter in the game once, because I'm often like fighting tree monsters and doing ill-advised things. I imagine that food would become much more of a problem then.
Yeah, you can't find berries. The birds still drop seeds, but things are very, it's harder to find because it starts snowing. So you can't see the ground very well. And if you're cold, then the whole screen kind of frosts and freezes over. So it be like traveling becomes very difficult. I haven't managed to survive through a winter. So I haven't, but I think this next game, I'm ready. I have so much beefalo hair. I'm so prepared. So I'm going to do it. Yeah, I've gotten to the winter about 3 times now. And it's pretty tricky.
Are you playing on the iPad or on the Mac?
On both, actually. Oh. It doesn't translate your single game between the two, but it depends on where I am, what I'm doing. And I find that the gameplay is extremely similar. I really don't even notice a difference.
Yeah, I only played it on the iPad. And I, like, given how complicated it is and that it started out on like desktop computers, it actually plays remarkably well. Like, I was a little concerned, but yeah, it seemed to play quite well on the iPad to me.
Yeah, my 3-year-old son loves to do it on the iPad too. He's pretty good at it.
Yeah. How long can he survive?
He survives like 3 days on his own.
Oh, wow, that's impressive. Yeah, so he knows to like make a fire and...
Yeah, he understands the concept of making a fire, and he understands, he's like, oh, mommy, I want to build this. Like, he wants to build the pickaxe so he could build, right, bust rocks. And I'm like, well, how do you build that? And he's like, you need sticks and rocks. So he like goes and finds the sticks and rocks. Oh, like, nice. He understands translating the menus and even holding down the action key that you have, you know, to like chop down a tree fully, which is pretty great. I'm very impressed with him. My little super genius.
Yeah, I couldn't even draw a circle when I was 3.
It's a game that I think kids would have a pretty easy time with because it's so like icon based, and because one thing I quite like about Don't Starve, like, I find it way more accessible than Minecraft in terms of the crafting, because the crafting is all very explicit, right? Like, one of the big problems with Minecraft is it's almost impossible to play effectively without looking up some of the crafting recipes on the internet, because you just, they're too annoying to find by trial and error. Whereas Don't Starve, it's just like, yep, you go in the menu and there's like a little picture of the thing you want and a picture of the things that you you know, that you need to do to get it. And so
it gives you like a little recipe card.
Yeah. So even if you can't read or you're just kind of like lazy, you can very easily figure out what you need to do. As opposed to Minecraft, yeah, it's always just like, oh, how the heck do I make that thing? I gotta look up the exact pattern and stuff like that.
Even The Long Dark like gives you those recipes. I still don't really have a good sense of why the Minecraft people think that it's a good idea to just, I guess they like the exploration of like, try random things. And I guess that's fun for people that are not me.
Yeah, I can't get into Minecraft. I tried it a while ago before even playing any of these other games, and it just wasn't for me. I built my little cave. I survived one night, and I was like, all right, I'm kind of done.
I think the thing about Minecraft is that it's not it's not fundamentally a very good survival game. Like, the things that make Minecraft attractive are the creative aspects of it, and the survival aspect is there, and it does kind of form a bit of a template that some of these later games worked off of, but it's definitely very rough and not particularly well balanced. Like, once you know what to do, it's very hard to fail at Minecraft survival unless you start purposely taking unnecessary risks.
Yeah, I think the fun thing that I had with Minecraft was much less about the survival and more about the building part of it, which is not kind of present in Don't Starve. I definitely get that feeling of like, okay, yeah, I'm making this little base and maybe it comes up in Long Dark, but I don't get the idea. I don't get the sense that you ever get to build anything. You don't get to like really develop a sense of, yeah, I constructed this base and I'm making it really good. It feels like it's, you're probably going to be constantly on the move. Is that accurate?
Yeah, in the Long Dark, you will set up kind of like, you can hoard food and resources and things in like the lockers if you get into maybe like the hydro dam or something where there's a lot of space, and there's a, you know, if you find a good spot that has a good spot for a fire indoors, it has a crafting table, it has storage for equipment, you can gather up a lot of things and use it as your kind of base. But then it kind of gets boring, you know, like the survive, you can get through a lot of days like that, you know, you really can. But after a while, you're like, you know what, I just kind of want to go on a little bit of an adventure and see what's else is out there. And that's what ends up getting you in trouble.
Yeah.
But like, there's one great spot that's a gas station in one of the alternative maps, and it's a great place to be. It's amazing. Like, everything you need is kind of there, and but you can only mentally, as a player, stay there for just for so long before you are aching to find out what else you can find.
And I would imagine that the single player game is going to have something pushing you forward a little more. Like, I think the maps, I've only played the first map, but from what I gather, the maps are kind of connected, like that there is a spot in the first map where you can like go to the second map kind of thing.
Yeah, they're connected by like small little transition maps, I guess, like a little like one you have to walk across this treacherous train track and you could die getting to the other map. Mm-hmm. So there is that possibility of accidentally, if it's too windy, falling off of these elevated train tracks that you have to use to get to the other maps, which I think is great, actually. It kind of makes you evaluate that risk of if you want to go there or not. But yeah, I hope that I'm pretty sure the campaign is going to be more of a, like the storyline will be much more leading as to where you have to go and what you have to do. I just really hope that they have a choice of you could play as a woman in that section too. You know, I feel like it might just start off as it might be a man only. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty attached to her.
Well, why a man only and not a woman only?
I know, like, right?
If you need to develop one character.
I mean, I'm pretty attached to the female character in Long Dark. So, like, her voice and everything.
She's pretty well voiced.
She's great like an voice. Indie game. Yeah. I would love to play her in the campaign, but I don't know.
It might just be an issue of what other stuff there is in the campaign. Like, always the sort of problem of multiple protagonists is you can end up with a lot of like dialogue tweaking if there is, if there is lots of voice stuff, which there could, I mean, a game like this doesn't seem like there's going to be a huge amount, but there definitely could be more in the single player game, particularly if there is something kind of pulling you forward that, I don't know, maybe you can get a hold of some other person on a walkie talkie or something like that. Or maybe there's, maybe your character's giving you hints. So it could just be sort of an asset creation issue that would prevent them from doing it. But it would be nice. It seems like a game that they could, if it's just a matter of recording the dialogue twice, like hopefully they could do that. But
it seemed like early on that was the idea, was that they were going to have both genders be able to play the storyline. But now it seems like they might have streamlined it to just be the man because of it was supposed to be released last year, and now they're pushing it to the end of this year. So maybe they, I mean, in the sandbox, they have radios that don't work that are around. They also have safes that you can't open. So I'm pretty curious to see that if in the story that you go through kind of the same landscape. But the whole idea of the game is that you're kind of in this situation where everyone's gone or dead all of a sudden and your plane crashed. So I don't know who you'd be talking to. So I would hope that the voice acting could easily be dynamically changed to male or female.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the point of the game is that everyone is gone, but I think it would be possible, but it would be pretty challenging to make a super compelling story where there's no other humans, like every single human in the entire world is all dead, and that all you need to do, like your end goal is to just get to a place where you can not die indefinitely. Like maybe, but it seems like more likely if there's a story, there's probably people. But
yeah, I'm curious. I'm excited to see where it goes because, I mean, the sandbox, that storyline works great. You know, don't die and keep going and see how long you don't die. And I think that works really well for a sandbox that you can just jump in and out of.
Yeah, it definitely will be interesting to see where they go with it. Cool. Well, I think that's a fun coverage of those games and survival in general. Tiff, where can people go to find out more about what you are up to?
They could pretty much find everything that I'm up to, I guess, on Twitter, Tiffany Arment on Twitter. Or that's pretty much where you can find everything happening.
Awesome. All right. Well, everyone go do that. And you can find the show on Twitter at UpUpShow. Somebody on Twitter today was jokingly berating me that not enough people follow UpUpDownDown on Twitter. So go do that if that is the sort of thing that you do. And we're also interested in your feedback, so you can rate us on the iTunes store to let us know what you think. See you next time. So other than survival games, what have you been playing? Or have you been just entirely engrossed you said you haven't been playing the winter one because it's not winter yet.
Well, actually, now that the weather's cooling down, I started playing Long Dark again, which I really like. And that's how I had to play it for the show, right? To get up to date on all the changes. I mean, they change things every couple months. But it's between, it's a lot of Don't Starve and Long Dark and Prison Architect.
Oh, yeah. So this is like
which is going to be released really soon with like a new storyline. I'm so excited. It's going to be awesome.
So storyline, is there actually like a story to this game, or is it just like a SimCity, City Skyline sort of, you're making this prison and it slowly gets more intricate kind
no,
of game?
No, actually a friend of mine, Joel Hausman, sent me an article I was reading about Prison Architect and how it's going to be launching soon. And it's going to have this great mode to it that it's not just going to be like this building sandbox that it is now. It is going to be, I can send you the link to, you can include it. Anyway, but you can like play as a prisoner and you can dynamically be in prisons that you've created or that anyone else has created on the network, which is really exciting. So I'm pretty excited.
But just like you're in the prison, like you're just trying to break out of the prison.
Yeah, you're the prisoner, and
I
you
can
try
finally
and
relive my dream of being incarcerated.
Yes, and you get to try and break out of your prison that you've built. So that's you could like you can get gangs together, and it's gonna be awesome. I'm pretty excited for it. I think it's gonna totally change the game. But I'm pretty into that game.
So before that, like so far, what is the gameplay of this? Like I've been imagining it as like a top-down sort of isometric. You're laying out walls. You're dealing with like sort of the same sort of problems you deal with any other sort of like top-down simmy type game. Is that what it's like?
Yeah, it is like that. The little people are adorable, little weeble kind of looking people, and as adorable as I guess prisoners could be. And you have to set up your prison and all of the different rooms and elements that are associated with that and the different security levels. But at the same time, it's not just building a prison. It's also managing the dynamics of a prison and making sure that all the inmates are surviving and thriving, you know, like you can set up programs so that they have educational programs or therapy programs if people are like particularly violent, so you could improve their lives. Or you could have like a death penalty prison where you just kill everybody, you know, like you could choose how you want to run it. So I have a lot of reform programs in my prison. So I like to take care of my little inmates. But so that makes it more than just building a whole bunch of rooms and being like, oh, I'll call it a day, you know. And you also need to make sure that your prison's profitable and you can accept different number of inmates that, for different security levels. It's really very, very fun.
I'm looking at a screenshot now. I find the fact that there are buttons including shakedown and bang up, as well as bureaucracy.
Yes. Yeah. And there's, you know, like you could also have things go wrong, like a riot could start and part of your prison goes on fire. So you have to contact outside help to help you put out the fire in your prison. And if it is an outside wall, the prisoners could escape. And then, you know, you get in trouble if they escape. And then you could get, you know, taken down because you are the architect. I don't know. But you can get taken down and put in your own prison because, and you can get your prison sold and taken away from you. But if you succeed, you could build up the prison and it could become very profitable. Your inmates could even like make little license plates and stuff to help make you money. And then you can sell that prison and build an even better prison with the money you used to sell the first one. So
the capitalist dream.
Yeah. But it's, I've been pretty into that. So that I played a lot of hours in that one too. Pretty much every time my kids at school.
I'm glad you can have them make license plates, because otherwise just it wouldn't be a prison game properly if they couldn't make license plates. And ideally they can also build roads and be chained together and do things like
hammers. I don't think you could bring them on chain gangs yet. Maybe that will be something that they'll put out later on. But the two guys that plus other people who made this game, they released these amazing alpha videos that are pretty much like their own little podcast. So if you ever are interested in this game and you want to kind of see its development from the very start up into it, its pending release in like less than a month, then I highly suggest watching those videos because they're really, really great. And one more tiny thing, I just want to put this out there for anyone who's listening. I put a personal little Easter egg into this game because that no one has found yet. I can't believe nobody found it. I guess not many people are playing Prison Architect, but I'm curious to see if when it is released and more people start playing that they come across something that I put into the game.
So what was the story of that? Like you were like, you met the people who were working on the game or you were active in the forums?
No. You can just, as part of the alpha for them to raise money, to continue making the game, they sold things for you to put into the game and you can kind of make your own prisoner, I guess. And so I put one in the game. I'm not going to tell you who it is.
Well, listener, all the listeners' new mission now is to find Tiff's prisoner. Do you get notified if that happens? Is that like an achievement, and then you can see that someone got the achievement?
Well, I know. I don't think that. I think they just kind of show up because the prisoners just show up in as many as you kind of let into your prison at the same at once, and they all have little names. So yeah, I made one. It's not me, but. So I think it would be fun to find out who it is.
Awesome. Have you been playing anything, Nigel? I guess probably just playing games as research for this.
Yeah, well, I was playing these ones as research. That the other things I've been doing is sort of related to this stuff. I have managed to finally get past my blockage on my grounded mode replay of Last of Us. So I'm now back on track on that. And then the other thing that's been big around here, the Mario Maker virus still has not quite burned itself out around here. The other thing the kids have been into that I've been roped into recently is Goat Simulator.
Oh, God.
I want to play that. I heard about it.
So apparently, you know, like all these years of like making, you know, big like 2-3 year development cycle console games was a waste of time because we could have just shipped our physics sandbox that we had on like month 3 of production and called that a game
and made like $1 million
off that. So
Goat Simulator is this game, for anyone who hasn't seen it, where it pretends like it has like a logo like sort of Microsoft Flight Simulator or whatever, and so the marketing sort of pretends that it's a serious game that simulates being a goat, but the physics is like, I don't know if they've intentionally tuned it to be bad or if it's just left as some sort of Unity defaults or whatever, but it's just like ridiculous physics and you just run around being a goat interacting with things in nonsensical ways and creating. I don't think there's any like There's, I don't think there's anything that like tells you to do anything, is there? Or just, you just go around and you
scribble? No, I don't think there's any story or goal or anything like that. It's basically just like run around breaking stuff and jumping off things and headbutting gas stations till they blow up and stuff like that.
Can you get hurt?
No, I don't believe so.
So you're an invincible goat destroying the world?
Yeah, basically.
Why would you not play that game?
This is so my next game. This is so the next game I'm playing.
It's a remarkable amount of fun. Like, it's, I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's like great, goofy kind of fun. Like, it's something to just, you know, and the thing that's really nice about it for around here, because I've got like three kids of not super widely separated ages, but widely separated enough that they're interested in different things, but it's something they can all be good at, right? Like, most of the games that the boys play, like, Katie just is not good enough to play them, even though she wants to, and so she tries and then gets upset, whereas, like, Goat Simulator, like, they can all play it together and have a blast and not get mad at each other because someone's not keeping up or not waiting for them or something like that. So it's a, particularly as a family game, it's quite a bit of fun.
Yeah, I think that that general genre of like mucking around and causing ridiculousness is a wonderful sort of result of the sort of indie Steam world. Like, no AAA publisher is going to be like, oh yeah, we're gonna put you know, printed discs of PlayStation 4 versions of Goat Simulator in stores around America, but. But you can make it, and people have fun with it.
And then to jump back, like I said, the other thing I'm playing, which I think kind of ties in with what we're talking about of, you know, difficult games, is I finally got past the one section that I was completely stuck on for like a month on playing through Last of Us on the hardest difficulty level. And so I started making progress on that again. And it's...
Was it in the subway? Were you stuck in the subway?
No, I was stuck at the dam.
Oh, because I was stuck in the subway for, like, days.
Were you also playing it on the hardest difficulty?
I was. Well, not the one that you get after you, not, like, the extreme survival one.
Yeah, that's
one,
what I'm playing it on.
That's what you're playing now? Like, that's the one that you get after you play the regular hard that's available, and then the super hard one becomes available after that.
I think it becomes available as soon as you finish the game on any difficulty level, because I don't believe...
Oh, that's crap.
I don't think I've played through it on regular... Well... Maybe I did, because I played through it on the PS3 when it first came out, and then I played through it again because I got the PS4 version, you know, for free, essentially, because I got it.
Is it better?
On the console. Like, in hard mode or on the PS4?
On the PS4.
It looks a little better, but it's not substantially different. I mean, it was a pretty good-looking PS3 game already.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite games, if you listen to Top 4. Yeah, I love that game.
But yeah, I mean, it's brutally hard on the hardest difficulty. Like, I have, I think, 6 bullets right now. And, you know, when you spend a bullet is, like, a pretty momentous decision.
Mm-hmm. So it becomes a lot more of a stalking kind of being silent.
Yeah, I mean, a lot more stealthing, a lot more carefully thinking about, I mean, some of the chunks I've had to replay... Like, the part that I was stuck on, like, after the dam is attacked there, and you gotta, like, fight your way all the way back through it. Because you have to do that in a single, like, basically in a single go. Like, if you die anywhere between when they initially attack, like, in the generator room there, and when you get back to where, like, Ellie and the, I can't remember her name, your brother's wife are, you die anywhere in that section, you start all the way over from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And there's like exactly what you're
three
talking
or
about.
Four battles along there, right? So it's a hard slog. I think I replayed that 30 or 40 times before I made it, something like that. And you have, yeah, you just have like no visibility on what's going on. Like, it's got no HUD. You've got no listen button anymore, so you can't see really? Where guys are.
Oh, it's that's brutal. Bad. Wow, that's awesome. That's really awesome. It makes me want to play it again.
So one total inside baseball thing, but I feel like I need to ask Tiff because she's on the show just after this is concluded. Marco has done this giant podcasting review where he's bought 10,000 podcast microphones and has decided which one is correct. And you and Marco each had sound clips for each one so we could see. And if anyone for some reason is interested in this topic, I'll link it up. But which one did you settle on? What microphone did you end up going for?
I'm using the KMS 105.
Okay, so that's his. Yeah, that is on his list as number two in his ranking.
Yeah, he might actually get a second one of this and use it himself as well. But yeah, after all the tests, we think that this one sounds the best for dynamic range as well as taking care of ambient noise in the room. I don't know. How do I sound?
Yeah, you sound great.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's just something that's kind of interesting because I know we're getting totally off topic from games, but it's fascinating to me that you generally don't have anyone review podcast microphones in particular. You might get microphone reviews, but they're always like, okay, so you're going to be doing a live show in a concert, or you're going to be, you know, recording your acoustic guitar or whatever. And there's just not enough podcasters in the world that have this sort of time and attention to be able to be like, I'm going to get all of the podcast microphones and I'm going to record with two different people and sometimes with multiple distances from the microphone, what they all sound like. Normally you just go into Amazon and people say, this is the mic I have, 5 stars.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Marco is very dedicated.
Yeah, dedicated reviewer.
He is. He's very dedicated. And he also likes getting boxes from our nice UPS guy. So.
Well, you're like on first name basis. You give him a Christmas card, don't you?
We do. His name's Gregory.
Gregory.
It is. Actually, my son asked Gregory to bring him something the other day, like he was Santa Claus.
He's
does
like, that work? This is the guy who brings things.
He's like, I want Gregory to bring me this thing. You know, I'm pretty sure he wants like a cozy potty. That's what he was asking for. But yeah, he's like, I want Gregory to bring it. We're like, all right, we'll talk to Gregory.
Please make sure you deliver this particular package.
Yeah. I think he thinks that Amazon and Gregory are the same thing.
That's pretty close. The reasonable mental model.
But yeah, Marco's mic review is pretty excellent and epic. And he was very, very excited about the $12 one that he just recently added to the list.
Yeah, I mean, for $12, I mean, it's...
Yeah, he's like, I can't believe how good this is. It was pretty freaky.
Well, it's better than... Like, he rated it higher than, like, multiple mics that are hundreds of dollars that I've heard podcasters say, no, this is the mic that you should use. Like... The Heil PR40 people say it's like, oh, this is a $300 mic and you need like a $400 interface for it. And he's like, well, you know, this $12 one, you know, considering this $12, you should get this one instead.
Like, yeah, it's pretty good for someone who just wants to like, you know, start off and see how they're going to go. And I mean, it's not
maybe
much
we need to just buy one of those and send them to every guest that we have so that they don't have to record with their headset mics or their... like laptop external mics or something like
that. Would be
like
pretty good. Like, you know, that would be really good PR for the show too, right? Like we're going to be sending out brand new microphones to all of our guests.
I like the idea of that on one level, like going to the level of dedication to try to get good audio for the show. But I have a pretty strong suspicion that going to add any complexity for the like 80 to 90% of our guests that have not been on a podcast, and a lot of them have Windows computers and a lot of them have not set up audio before, that we would get them, you know, our $12 mic, or even if we sent them like a $200 mic, that they would still end up recording their laptop microphone like like Bobby did on our last episode.
That's true. They'd be like, oh yeah, I have it, it's right here under my desk and in its box, I didn't get a chance to take it out yet.
Well, that would at least then we would know. But we get, and this has happened maybe 3 or 4 times, and like they actually often end up being like really good episodes just by coincidence. So I'm like, well, I'll clean it up and post it. But that we go through this kind of back and forth with the guests, like, okay, so here's how you record on Windows. You got to download this thing, and you're gonna you know, download and do a test recording and make sure the mic that you're talking into is the mic that you're recording. And like, oh yeah, sounds good, blah blah blah. And then I get the file, and you can hear that they're talking right into a good microphone, but you can hear from as soon as I press play, I'm like, yep, this is the microphone inside a closed laptop 1 inch from the fan. I can just hear it.
That's so frustrating. Good thing we have a Mr. Dynamic microphone in-house here to set me all up nice.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Tiff. I think that was a great episode.
Yeah, thanks
for having me. It was really, really fun to finally get to talk about these games to other people that have played them instead of, you know, trying to talk to Marco at dinner about, like,
you won't believe what this beefalo did.
Yeah, let me tell you about this cool beefalo herd I came across and this deer that I killed. And
or especially if you're talking about The Long Dark and you're like, oh, yeah, you won't believe how I, like, just very, very slowly starved and, you know, died of cold, but it took a while.
I froze to death in 3 more days than it took me last time.
Although he always knows whenever I'm like, ah, he's like, oh, how'd you die this time? So he's supportive.